Welcome to Knowledge Cast. This is a look into the world of knowledge management, information management, data management, and everything in between. This is brought to you by Enterprise Knowledge. I'm Zach Wall, founder and CEO of EK, and today we're speaking with Evan Shankman. Evan is the Chief Knowledge and Innovation Officer at Fisher Phillips. Evan, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Zach. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I am really excited to hear from you. It looks like you've had a long and successful career in KM. And as always, Evan, I want to lead off by asking you to explain KM to me. Define knowledge management in your terms, please.
Sure. So I've always said something like the formal discipline of organizing a firm's collective knowledge and data and information, and then figuring out ways to leverage that to make your organization do things better, smarter, faster, more consistent, and so on. But I think probably over the past 2-3 years, I'm rethinking that definition. I think it's probably a little bit too insular, just because there's so much happening now, so many advances in technology, so much more data and information available from the world, that now the definition really has to include not just your own organization's collective knowledge, data, info, but also and the world's collective knowledge, info, data, and then integrating that all to help make your attorneys or your organization, people, whatever they might be, more consistent, more efficient, higher quality, and so on. So it's a really exciting time, I think, to be in KM because that definition is changing in a way that makes it a lot more exciting, a lot more broad. And, you know, the sky's the limit for what's going on in KM right now.
I would say, Evan, geez, just when we were getting our arms around this thing, you just blew it up and said it's all the stuff everywhere in the world. That doesn't make this insurmountable, does it?
Right. So we have a few days to talk, right?
Yes, this will be part one of a 33-part series here with Evan Shankman. So let's dig in. Now, first of all, I always listen for the verbs that someone uses in their definition. And it's striking to me that you actually jumped to the outcomes. And I really like that. Smarter, faster, better, more consistent, higher quality. That's a great way of explaining what you do. But the other part that was striking to me is that you said knowledge, information, and data. And this is that long-running, call it an argument in the industry of what's knowledge and what's information and what's data. My personal stance has been, who cares? You need it all to be successful. I'm guessing that based on your definition that you and I are in the same camp there. Would I be right?
I completely agree. I think it's probably semantics, and you can tease out what the difference is, and you could have a lot of information that you don't understand, and therefore it's, you know, become from data to information when you figure out what it is. All of that, I think it's sort of highbrow to talk about it, and it might be interesting to talk about the semantics, but at the end of the day, it's all about what you can do with that information and what benefits it will bring to your organization and what benefits it will bring to your clients or your customers or whoever. So what you call it is not nearly as important to me as the benefits that come out of it and the ways that you can explain to the stakeholders why it's important and why there should be buy-in and why it matters to the future prospects of the organization and brings the ROI where you want it to be and so on. So for me, it's much more about the results than it is what you want to call it on the back end.
Awesome. Love it. So let's talk about the results. Again, I love these words, smarter, faster, better, more consistent, higher quality. Go deeper. Tell me more about what results you achieve for Fisher Phillips and for your colleagues there through your activities.
There are a lot of different projects that we have going on, all of which have sort of big picture, the same focus of quality, consistency, efficiency, all of that. But some of them fall into the bucket of helping behind the scenes our attorneys do things better, make them more efficient. Others fall in the bucket of helping our attorneys collaborate better with clients. And some others fall in the bucket of let's just try new, exciting, innovative things because that's good for our organization. Our clients appreciate that. Our prospects appreciate that and so on. Some of the things that we've been doing now that are public facing are data analytics efforts. That all falls under knowledge management at our firm, the ones that are public facing. And we're figuring out ways to combine our firm's internal experiences with information that we can find from external sources. Information about case filings, information about things that are happening in the legal space, laws that are passing, rules that are passing, and so on. And we found that a lot of our clients and the general public, they want to have better ways to digest complicated legal information. Legal information is written in a way that not everybody who hasn't practiced law will appreciate the nuance. We'll be able to get to cut through the legalese and so on. And it's also all over the place and it's hard to track down. So during we started during the pandemic and we've done it since then in different areas, but we've looked at things that we thought might be helpful to the general public. Like once COVID happened and we knew that this is going to impact employers all over the place, we started providing resources and materials on our firm's website for employers to use to be able to quickly comply with the myriad of laws that were being passed. And we thought that was helpful. It captured all the knowledge of our attorneys. The best and brightest attorneys on these areas said, we want to provide this information to the general public to help them get their employees back to work safely, comply with the mask mandates, and comply with all the other things that happened. We then sort of realized that that was popular. It brought a lot of eyes on our website, which was great because it showed people that our firm had really high subject matter expertise on this. So it was a good, you know, ROI there on the effort to develop those resources and make them available. But then we went to sort of the data analytics space. We said, what else could we do using our KM folks, our data analysts at the firm? And let's look and see what information we could pull from various sources. We had information, for instance, about all of the case filings all across the country in the labor and employment space, and combining that information that we pulled via APIs. And that's one of the ways that I mentioned earlier on, that APIs help us get data from the world in real time into our firm that we could then manipulate. We combined all of that information with our great library, our legal researchers, to figure out certain aspects of those cases, what industry did it affect, what was the actual case type. And then we used, our folks would put into Power BI, and we made heat maps and trackers and put that on our website too. And it was a way to show, once again, helpful information to the world about where they had to be concerned, where the lawsuits were coming, what states were they coming in, what types of cases. And it really blew my mind that we thought it would be something that would be helpful. And maybe, you know, some folks would look at it and think it was cool and interesting. But it immediately went to the top of Google for COVID-19 employment litigation. It's been there now for about 3 years. It brought so many people to our firm to ask follow-up questions, to write articles about it. It was, you know, in CNN and Newsweek and The Atlantic and Fox News, and everyone was quoting our tracker. So it's a KM project that we thought would be helpful, that then really elevated our brand, the vision that folks in the world had about our firm's expertise in this area. So the ROI was incredible, but that's not what we set out to do. We set out to just try to, you know, use this technology, use our information, and share it. That's sort of a public-facing version of a KM project that worked really well over the past few years. And we've now since created other heat maps and other trackers because we realized how much people like them. So we've created trackers for OSHA inspections and MSHA inspections and other things like that. And we're going to keep doing things like that. We have a lot of other, you know, KM projects that are internal. We have data analytics projects that involve all of our firm's internal experiences with cases. How much do cases cost? When do cases tend to settle? How much do they tend to settle for with this judge and this opposing counsel in this venue with these allegations? So there's so much data available to law firms, and they've had this data available for years on what the billings look like and what the outcomes look like, but it was never captured in a way that made sense or that let you make sense of it. So we started doing that, and we're working on building a large database that combines all of that data in one place, also pulls in external data about the cases from public sources to supplement our internal data, and then it lets us make predictions as to what we think is likely to happen with that particular fact pattern in that venue and so on. And that's been another one that it's been great for us to be able to drive strategy and figure out what we think it will cost, and the clients really appreciate that. We have, and you know, many firms out there have really great attorneys, but not every firm has, I think, a real dedicated interest or focus on trying to do some of these cooler things with analytics, with artificial intelligence, with machine learning tools to start to sort of do these things on their own. I can give you one more quick example if you
want.
Please
do.
One of the things that we also want to try to do, this is more of sort of an AI component one, which has really been a big hit for us. It's always important for any law firm and probably any business to always know what's happening with their customers, with their prospects, and so on. And for a law firm in particular, it's really helpful to know when your clients or when your prospects or your whoever is the subject of a lawsuit or a charge or something happening involving an agency. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, that's a very manual process to try to figure out, to see all these lists of who was sued where or what agency or whatever, and then figure out, is it one of our clients? And if so, who should we let know? Who should we notify? Which attorneys and so on? And it took hours and hours and hours each day for a team of folks in our library to be handling that process and then send a message out and give the information about the case or the charge and so on. So over the past year, we developed a tool that essentially automated that. It used a combination of APIs, some artificial intelligence to figure out whether they are a client of ours or a prospect of ours. And then in addition to automating that email that goes out, it did something which I really like, which is it pushed additional information to the attorneys. So it says, by the way, you might check out this new case or these new cases that are involving your clients. And here also, if you click, we'll run analytics on the judge. This will pull up an industry report for you from this source. This will give you information about the most recent time we represented this client and who the attorney was. It'll give you, you know, other information that lets them take some actionable steps to try to, when they have that call with the company, to be able to talk intelligently and give them all the information that they need to know to explain why the firm is best suited to handle that matter. And it does it all automatically twice a day. Doesn't need those reference librarians. And now they could spend their time doing more higher value legal research, which they'd rather do than pulling up complaints and sending the emails and following up and so on. So three different examples, I guess, of different kinds of KM projects. And man, those projects really differ from if we had this conversation 7, 8, 9 years ago, where it was, well, we spend our time building precedent libraries and template forms and so on. Still important stuff, but KM is really changing over the past few years in ways that I think really benefit our attorneys and our clients.
It really is an exciting time for KM. And boy, did you just give me a lot to ask about here. So well done. I'm excited. First of all, I really want to point out, you're approaching KM, I think, from a really modern perspective. You're talking about how data can enable good KM experiences, how data plays a role in this. And we're seeing that merger of KM and data as a really major trend. So it sounds like Fisher Phillips is ahead of that. You're also talking a lot about pushing knowledge, right? So in the olden days, I needed to know what I was asking for, and I needed to take the action to go looking for it. And increasingly, through AI and intelligent systems, we're seeing how information and knowledge can be pushed proactively to the right people. And you've got a really great example of that with your third case study there. Let's pull a little bit of this apart. The first example, what I love about it is twofold. One, you noted that you're pulling a bunch of knowledge from the outside world. So it's the perfect example of where you began your definition of KM. But you also provided a very specific example of ROI. You're using KM for marketing. And that doesn't often make the list of how people are getting a return on investment from knowledge management. You're actually generating leads. You're generating interest in your organization by serving up great knowledge. You took something that was out there, you applied your organization's own expertise to it, and then you put it in a readily consumable, publicly available place and way and look and feel so that others can act on it, find it, Google hits it at the top of the list, and voila, you have new customers. I mean, to be very direct about it, that's what's happening, right? That's amazing. That's great. How much of that was intentional? I know you said, well, we were doing this as a public service and we felt there would be value to our clients and potential clients from this. But was it actively pitched as a, this is going to help with marketing sort of thing? Or was that really just a secondary benefit?
I think there's always a combination of those two. I think for years, KM professionals at law firms and otherwise have been looking for ways to reinforce their value and what they could bring. And I think even before these examples I gave and before the pandemic happened, there were other KM things that were public facing. As an example, for probably 7 or 8 years now, when my firm goes on pitch meetings, sometimes to bring in business or to meet with a prospect to talk about handling their cases, I've been involved in a lot of those pitches. I explain why our firm is better because we're doing things in a more innovative way and we're using the latest technology to help collaborate better and give them what they need when they need it and all of that. So I think I've always had a focus on for KM to be as successful as it can be and to get the buy-in from senior leadership and attorneys, it has to be, to some extent, client or public facing. So I think that the example of the COVID-19 litigation tracker is a good example of that. And I think when we went into this, it certainly is a hybrid. I think a lot of law firms, including ours, have known for decades that it's not just about billing hours and helping with projects. There also is a component of demonstrating your expertise and putting things on your website. Before it was KM on a website, it was articles about legal developments and breaking news. So there's a tradition of figuring out, what will be helpful to the general public to help them, know how to comply with a new law, a new regulation, and how can we get there first and do the best job at it. And I think KM now is in that that same category of a department or a unit within the law firm or within the company that, just like the folks who write great articles, they also can provide great content. So when we were going about with these heat maps, with these trackers, we thought it would be a great way to help and a great way to reinforce that we're a firm that is pushing the envelope in terms of data analytics and KM, and also doing it in a way that others haven't thought to, and that would bring extra people to our site. So I think we got them both.
And there's the innovation in your title. Love it. And by the way, what a great Venn diagram, helping the world and winning new clients along the way. I'll take that any day. So, Evan, what strikes me about both the second example that you gave as well as the last is that we're getting into some pretty innovative technology here. Can you talk a little bit about your tech stack, what you've been experimenting with, what you've been playing with in order to enable some of this?
Yeah. Let me just say at the outset that I think regardless of the number of people you have on your KM team or your IT team or your innovation team and so on, there's only so much that any law firm or company, unless you're Google or IBM or whoever, can do on their own. So from my perspective, the tech stack, it's important. But for me, and the success that we've been able to see with some of these projects is that we found really good innovative companies to start with. And a lot of these, by the way, are startups. And we've been partnering with startups for years now to do a lot of these really great things that have gotten us a lot of visibility and a lot of traction, a lot of great results for these projects. So with regard to the data analytics project, we're working with a startup called LegalMation to work on that. We've been doing some incredible things with a company called CaseText in the AI space and the machine learning space and the natural language processing space. And from my perspective, working with these startups has been just a terrific thing for being able to go much further than we ever would have been able to try to go on our own, because you just can't hire enough people to do what a lot of these companies are already ready to do. But putting our firm and our skill set and our subject matter expertise together with some of these AI startups, for instance, or analytics startups, has let us really leapfrog where we would have been if we tried to just do it all ourselves. And it's also, from my perspective, a lot more interesting and a lot more fun and a lot more innovative than if we just went out and bought something that's already being built. It's much more fun to partner with these startups because we're able to help create something in our own vision and work right with their R&D team to build something. And yes, at some point it'll go public and it'll be sold to other firms and so on. But getting to work with these companies for years behind the scenes and make it in the vision that we would like that product to be has been really instrumental in getting a lot of these things off the ground and doing them in a way that really is several years ahead of where other firms might be if they're just waiting for them to be ready to buy off the shelf.
Yeah, it's exciting to hear. It's also a very, I would say, almost unique willingness to embrace some uncertainty and maybe even risk with some of these smaller organizations. Is that part of Fisher Phillips culture? Is that something that you've brought to the organization? How has this happened? Because you don't tend to see big, well-established law firms playing with startups in the tech realm.
I think it is 100% part of the DNA of this firm. And I know from past interviews, you've also asked, why people, changing jobs and how people ended up there and ended up in KM. Yeah. I wouldn't have come here about 3 years ago if it wasn't part of their culture, part of their DNA. Right. Because in order to really be successful in any of these initiatives, you need to have an innovator's mindset. You need to know that it's okay if some of these projects don't work out. you have to break some eggs. Sometimes things will fail. Yeah, you always want to fail fast, but sometimes these things will not change the world like you thought they might. There always is a risk in doing these projects, but if you're at a place that appreciates innovation, it appreciates forward-thinkingness, it's part of their mission statement, and it is at our firm to do whatever we can to use technology to innovate and so on. Our clients expect it and appreciate it. So yeah, taking a chance with startups, taking a chance on these projects, we've been super fortunate to have a string of successes, but it could just as easily be a string of failures. I hope that's not the case. And we try to do whatever we can to make sure that we're preventing that from happening. And if it does happen, you try to, you know, pull the plug quickly on that project. But it's a great question, because I think the culture of the organization, the culture of the firm, is critical in any KM and innovation function being successful. If everyone's afraid to try new things, you're never going to be anything other than just several years behind what everyone else is doing, because you'll wait and see and make sure that everything is successful and everything works before you buy it. You might be okay. It might be, you know, calm and easy, but you're never going to be innovative and pushing the envelope. And I think it's a much better place to be and a much more fun place to be from my perspective if you are more at the cutting edge than 5, 6, 7 firms down the line.
Love it. As they say, the view never changes if you're not in the lead. I think that's great. I hear all this agile language from you: fail fast, innovation, you know, try new things. Is that agile mindset also part of the Fisher Phillips culture, or is that something that is unique to KM and to you within the organization?
I don't think fail fast and the agile mindset is unique to Fisher Phillips. I think it's quite common in legal KM. I think probably 6, 7, 8 years ago, there was a lot of talking about it at conferences and so on. But I think Fisher Phillips is certainly right in line with that mindset and making sure that at least from the direction that I've been given and the direction that I'm taking, we want to make sure that we're doing really great things in a way that makes sense, push the envelope to the right level. And if we see that we're going too far over our skis, we'll pull back a little bit.
I like that, but I also don't think you're giving yourself enough credit. I just had a senior executive at a very large law firm tell me that they don't like KM because if they get too good at finding stuff and reusing stuff, then their billings are going to go down. So what you're doing there is not what everybody is doing, and that should be called out and recognized.
No, I appreciate that. And that's something that you'll always hear in a law firm because a lot of legal matters are billed by the hour. But at the end of the day, you want your clients to be happy and you want your clients to think that they're working with a firm that's providing high quality work efficiently. And KM tools and services and so on help get the attorneys there. And a lot of times, that's not the end of the picture. If clients are consistently writing off certain things, is that better for the attorneys to have all their time written off? Or wouldn't it be better if they could just provide the product at the right amount of expected time that makes sense for them and makes sense for the client? So I know there really are, and there may be always concerns about that issue, but if done right, I really think it's something that works itself out.
Excellent, and well said. So let's hit on your third case study here for a second. I already lauded you for this mindset shift, this new trend that we've talked a lot about of rather than having to pull, all of a sudden the knowledge is being pushed. But you said something else in here that I thought was particularly cool. Once somebody gets the push, once they get the piece of information, there are actions that they can take as a result. And this is, we use the phrase here, action-oriented KM, and I think it's really in line. Somebody doesn't get a piece of information and then say, okay, I'm done. They get a piece of information, and the next question is, well, what do you want to do with it? Let's enable those next actions. It's a great mindset, but you know exactly what actions your colleagues want to take. And that to me is one of the biggest challenges. As a KM executive, you have taken the time and the energy to understand your colleagues and understand the actions they want to take. It's critical to you being successful and making them successful. But I'd love for you to talk a little bit about what your approach to that was. How did you really understand the unique actions that your colleagues want, need to be able to take within the firm?
Very briefly, for purposes of this question, my background before KM was as a practicing attorney. I practiced law for 10 years. I was a partner.
So you're cheating. I see.
Yeah. And then I realized after 10 years of it, I'd rather be doing something else. And that something else was legal tech and innovation and KM and all that great stuff that I've now been doing for about 12 years and loving it. So I think for a KM professional, the easiest way to answer that question is if you have your own personal subject matter expertise that helps get you far along the way. Because as a practicing attorney, here are the things that I would have wanted when I knew that my client was in need of legal help. I'd want to have these things. I'd want to know about the industry. I'd want to know about the judge. I'd want to get our internal feedback. I'd want external feedback. I know all that stuff. But I know a lot of fantastic KM professionals at law firms who are not lawyers, but they have really good teams of former practicing attorneys as KM counsel, or they have other people who have been in the legal industry, or they survey, they ask questions. But I think you need to get that information somehow. The easiest way is if your KM members have come from within the industry and have that information. But maybe two-thirds, from my personal story, the majority comes from our KM team because we've hired people who have that prior experience. But we still get a great amount of information via comments and suggestions and requests that come into our library. And if we see our firm's top business generators routinely asking for the same six data points every time that they know one of their clients is in need of legal advice, and we see how successful it is, it's typical KM. We will then start to say, hey, you know what? It's a great idea to start asking for a report on the industry and the jargon for that industry and the issues that have been impacting that industry over the past 2 years. And we could now, thanks to APIs and other systems, we can automate the process of giving those same data points to the rest of the firm. It makes everybody stronger because of either the insights and the information that my team has or what we've pulled out from other people at our firm via suggestions or just observations. So that's one of the things we always try to do. When we figure out what we want to push, we want to try to make every single attorney at our firm as smart as the smartest, best attorney in every aspect across our offices across the country. And not everybody has the time and ability to do that on their own, but that's where KM comes in. And we can go and try to figure out what ways have proved successful and then figure out how to spread that knowledge information out in a way that where they don't even need to think about asking for it. We push it directly to them at the moment when they need it, when the case comes in or when they open up a window and start to write a brief or whatever it is. We know what they're looking for or what they should be looking for, and we try to get it to them.
Excellent. So you also hit on knowledge at the point of need there, right? I mean, as you get more and more into AI, as you understand more about the cases and the individual attorneys, you're going to be able to more specifically push the right knowledge at the right time to the right people. And I love, Evan, the way that you said this, that you want to make every attorney as smart as the smartest attorney on every topic. What a cool KM mantra and what a neat way of painting the picture for what y'all are trying to do. I really appreciate that. So Evan, it strikes me, I mean, you're speaking about some really exciting, innovative elements on the technology realm of KM. But I think a lot of our listeners want to understand what it takes to make that stuff actually work. I think too many people think that, boy, if I just plug in the big blue machine, all of a sudden we've got knowledge AI in our organization. Can you talk either specifically about what's been done at Fisher Phillips or more broadly from your own experience about what are those foundational activities that need to happen to enable the really advanced KM that you're getting to experience now?
For just sort of starting in the KM space, there are things that really any organization can do, I think. But it's one of the nice things that we're seeing now is technology is advancing. So not all of the same sort of homework behind the scenes that we had to do 5, 6, 7 years ago to make these systems work will be necessary in the future. But I think just from a simple standpoint of figuring out who in the organization knows what. When we started doing these systems, there were surveys. But those surveys were very helpful because you had to pull out information about what people's experiences were and what they knew and who they knew. So I'll give an example of sort of a low-tech version. As a law firm, we wanted to know what people thought about judges, about opposing counsel, about expert witnesses, about mediators, about arbitrators. That information, a lot of times, resides in people's brains. Sometimes it's in emails. Sometimes it's emails sent across the firm saying, does anybody have experience with this particular judge? What do you think? critical information for a law firm to know what to expect when they have a particular opposing counsel is representing the other side, or you're going before a particular arbitrator and so on. So for something like that, you know, it's not artificial intelligence, it's not data analytics, it's just capturing that information. And these projects sometimes require going to the various attorneys and getting on the phone and asking them questions, but not just asking questions and forgetting it, logging it into a database. We then will go and say, hey, you know what? A lot of this information is shared via email. So we figured out how to search those emails and find which emails had that sort of information and which terminology in the emails. Often it was any emails preceded with PTI, pardon the interruption, might be ones that might have that information. And we would capture it and put it into databases. And those typically were Excel spreadsheets that each office would keep. They then were combined into maybe SharePoint databases. And now we have a tool via a company called Courtroom Insight that we helped build this database there that has all that information in it. And it's just an easy way to search, right? It's nothing entirely sexy. A lot of firms have these databases, but a lot of firms don't. And it's amazing how having one easy system that is a combination of personal phone interviews, finding emails, finding documents, finding repositories that various offices have been keeping on their own, putting them all in one place. It's amazing how many things before you have a strong KM function reside on people's desktops or an office administrator's personal desktop. And until you ask, hey, has anybody been keeping pet repositories of feedback on judges or feedback on whatever, you won't know what's there. So lots of these projects involve just sort of hunting around and finding things. Are they the most innovative machine learning, you know, artificial intelligence, click a button, you have the answer? No, they definitely aren't. But you need to start with projects like that. You know, you need to crawl before you can stand, before you can run, and so on. And some of these low-hanging fruit KM projects have been wildly successful. And it also gets people to appreciate the knowledge sharing culture and realize like, wow, this is great. Even though this person was out of the office that day, we still have his feedback. We could pull it up in a second and know the answer.
And it's truly foundational, right? I mean, there's not much AI can do if it doesn't have the feeder content and the feeder data. And what you just described were a couple of the ways that an organization can proactively get that great knowledge in order to be able to do cool things with it. Now, I want to note this. I've often been asked, how do you incentivize a really senior expert, a partner lawyer, a senior economist, a doctor, a physician, a senior engineer to directly share their knowledge? And my answer is generally, you don't. Those people make too much money and are way too busy to be the ones loading a lesson learned into a database. Both of the examples that you gave was your team doing something to extract that knowledge, either pulling it from their email or in a way almost directly interviewing them, asking them, and then loading it themselves. Did I get that right?
Yes, although we do have some success in attorneys providing that information themselves directly. Once they see the value of the database, they're much more likely to contribute to it. And we also have ways of building that into sort of the everyday workflow. There are certain pieces of information that we ask about when cases are opened. You know, information, who's the client, what's the industry, what's the case type, who's the judge, and all that. And there's also information that we ask of those same attorneys when matters are closed, as well as some information that we're starting to automate to ask at various stages of the matter. Is it still the same judge? Is it still the same court? Was it removed from state court to federal court, and so on? And we now have firm systems that are going to be sending out their own automated surveys that will ask the sort of questions that will help populate these databases. And also the nice thing is they can do their own ticklers when people don't respond. It can say, well, we haven't heard back. You know, can you please remind the attorney to give us that information? It's also helpful because these systems can say, hey, there have been 90 hours billed in a case. Has this information been received yet? No, shoot a message out to them. So there are various ways to sort of reinforce that knowledge sharing. Some of them are, you'll never get the information unless you call that person up directly. But for a lot of the folks, it's helpful to have some sort of automated system to get that information in. And you also could always put requirements in order to close a matter out. And you need to close matters out to comply with firm policy. Or if that's the case at your firm, you need to provide these 6 data points. Did the matter resolve? If so, did it settle? Okay. At what point did it settle? And that sort of information. So it's a combination of people. combination of technology, it's a combination of schmoozing, of getting the right level of cajoling and tech. It's really great if you could automate it. But for a lot of these data points, there's no way to find the information unless you actually ask the attorney herself or himself.
Excellent. We refer to this as high value moments of knowledge capture. If you just randomly say, hey, share your lessons learned, they're not going to do it. But if a case has just been won or lost and you say, hey, that's a trigger, tell us how it went, three pointed questions, answer these questions, and then you graduate. That's the sort of thing that we find much more successful. And it seems like you're well on that. I love your point about automating it in the forms of surveys or other like kind of digital entry forms. Really interesting.
One other suggestion, if it can work this way. We've found a lot more success if we reach out to an attorney with, whether it's automated or not, to say, here are the three things that we think are correct. Let us know if they're not. Rather than saying, you know, here are three questions to answer with blank lines. If we could do that for everything, I think it would be even better. But that tends to be more successful in getting quick responses than having them start from a blinking cursor.
That's the old sales technique, right? If you just email somebody and say, hey, I want to talk to you, then they're not going to respond. But if you ask them a question that it's easy for them to say yes or no to, then you're exactly. more likely to get a response, which I hate, by the way, and I never respond to those. So anybody listening who's trying to get a hold of me, don't try that. So Evan, you mentioned AI, and you've also mentioned some of those foundational elements. But one of the things that you said that really struck me is that the world is changing, that where KM has gone from a technical standpoint is not where it was even just a few years ago. How does where KM is going fit into your equations at Fisher Phillips? I mean, the world is talking about ChatGPT right now. I think it just passed a law school exam. So there's some interesting stuff going on. Where do you see technology in the industry and AI heading?
Generative AI and, you know, large language models beyond just ChatGPT, I think it's completely revolutionary. From my perspective, the technology behind that, and again, ChatGPT is sort of an appetizer. I really thank OpenAI for essentially making it available and letting the world see what this technology is capable of. But, you know, they agree that it's not ready for prime time. You shouldn't rely on it for real stuff. But what's coming in the future, based on that sort of technology, the large language model technology and the generative AI, it's going to completely revolutionize KM in general. I mean, from my perspective, and I talked right at the start of this conversation, I talked about how I think my personal definition of KM is changing. It's not just about harnessing the organization's data and information and so on. And it's more now supplementing that with the world's data and knowledge and information. And what these large language models are now going to be able to do is we'll be able to now have, you know, an entity, an AI system that has read every case, that has read every law review article, that has read every medical journal, that has read every newspaper article. And then we could say, here are our case facts. Here are the case documents. Help me develop a strategy for handling this medical malpractice case. And, you know, there's no person out there that's read every judicial opinion out there, every regulation out there, every medical journal out there, and can answer a question for you in 5 minutes, citing to references. It's the epitome of a worldwide knowledge management tool. And that sort of thing will start to be available. And it's not just pointing you to answers. It's actually synthesizing and coming up with its own narrative about it. Or, you know, write me an outline for an argument that I could make on these points or so on. So ChatGPT right now it's fantastic, but it's not tethered to any actual facts. It sort of can, on its own, do some creative writing. And the problem with it is that it doesn't tell you when it's doing creative writing. It just tells you what would sound credible to answer that question. But what's coming, what GPT and the next iterations of GPT are going to be able to do when they're actually tethered to the case law, the medical journals, the facts of your case, the opinions, whatever, will be completely revolutionary. Everything we've talked about sort of up until now will be turbocharged with this technology now that it's available. And I can't imagine what, if you and I met in 5 years, what we'll be able to talk about as being possible in the KM space because of this, these tools, these technologies. Gone are the days where we're going to have to spend all of our time doing manual metadata to certain things and you know, putting tagging and all that. This technology will be able to do that for you, I think. So lots of really exciting things are coming, all of which I think are fascinating for KM in terms of the opportunities. And I can't wait to see where it goes.
Pretty exciting. And I love the way that you explained that. I think there's one key point there that I want to reiterate. You know, right now, this is kind of black box AI. It's you're getting a question asked and then it kind of gives you an answer, but you don't know exactly where that answer came from. And I think that the big leap, the way that this is going to become a real knowledge management tool, is when you can trace that synthesized answer and all of its parts to its sources and know that you trust those sources and that the correct data were used as the inputs. And that's where it's heading. And I could see your leadership and Fisher Phillips having a role in playing with that. Maybe that's the next tool you want to bring in-house and do something neat with. So what would you recommend to somebody in maybe a different place in their career who wants to be you? I mean, you've got a pretty badass title, Chief Knowledge and Innovation Officer. I want to be a Chief Knowledge and Innovation Officer. That's neat. How do I get your job?
I think you need to have some experience in the KM field for some period of time to give you enough credibility to apply for it. From my perspective, in order to get there, whether you're a baby person in the KM community or you're more seasoned, I think one of the special things about KM in general is that KM people are sharers, not hoarders. And I think that's how people found KM. From my perspective and what worked for me, right off the bat, when I left the practice of law and moved into KM, I found a bunch of really, really smart, really, really experienced, really, really friendly people in the KM community that sort of took me under their wing and pointed me in the direction of articles to read or newsletters to sign up for or people to talk to or things to think about. And in general, the KM community has really just helped me at every step of the way, keep up to date with what's going on, keep smarter about late recent developments, point great vendors in my direction, take my advice about, things as well, lead me up the path to where I got to today. And I think for KM people to be successful and to get to the next level, you need to present at conferences, you need to write articles. In order to do those things, you have to be parts of those community. You have to be active on LinkedIn. You have to not just read things, but comment on people's posts and make hopefully salient points about things that are going on. And that starts to get you some credibility. Once you have that credibility, people nominate you for awards. And when you win awards, that's great too, because then the firm says, okay, this person probably knows what they're talking about because they've won an award for KM stuff. So it really all started from day one for me with finding some really great KM organizations to get involved in, really great people. Once you're at the point where you think you have some idea what's going on, you start to give back to the KM community and mentor other people. And that's, rewarding on both ends. That really, gets you there. That got me from first day KM person to a director of KM to senior director of KM to chief knowledge and innovation officer. You have a lot of really hard work to do, in your day job. But in order to have the visibility and the credibility to have somebody, reach out to you, and headhunters reach out to people that are, once you start to get senior all the time. But they do that because they see the articles, they see the posts, they see the awards, they see the whatever. But it all starts with making really good connections, being a good person, being willing to take advice from others, being willing to give advice to others, and doing all of that sort of, on top of your normal job. If you do it right, you tend to find yourself in a really cool role like I have.
I love that. I mean, what you just described takes a lot of energy and some boldness, but I think you're right. I mean, the KM community is full of people that have had that for themselves and have had people be kind to them and are looking to return that kindness. So I encourage all of our listeners to do exactly that. Reach out, ask for help, and I think that you'll be rewarded for your boldness. Evan, as we close here, what's that one piece of advice that you want to give to other KM professionals and organizations that are really looking to make KM stick within their organizations?
I think the main thing to focus on is and we touched about on this earlier, but it really is all about culture. If you find yourself at a place where you could have the greatest projects, the greatest tech, the greatest everything there, but your organization just isn't really taking to it, they're not buying in, they're not willing to try it out, you don't have senior leadership champions, you don't have customer user champions, the organization might not be ready for it. And my recommendation is if that's where you find yourself, it's probably time to think about going somewhere else, because no KM can be successful unless the organization's ready for it to be successful and supports it. with time, with energy, with resources, with people, and just with the willingness to try it.
Evan, great conversation. Thank you so much for sharing such concrete examples. I think many of our listeners were probably furiously scribbling notes like I was and saying, wow, we should try that. Really appreciate your thought leadership and thank you for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
To our listeners, thanks for joining us for this episode of the Knowledge Cast. To check out more on knowledge management and enterprise knowledge, visit us at our website, enterprise-knowledge.com. Thanks, y'all.